The court is reconvened. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good morning. We have with us today for this argument, Gilmantown High School. Would those students please stand? It's good having you with us. Please be seated. We have Tri-County Schools with us. Would those students stand? Seeing you all, please be seated. And we have Abbotsford School. Would they stand? And it's good seeing all of you. You may be seated. Several of these schools are with us with the Court with Class program, which is sponsored by the Supreme Court and the State Bar of Wisconsin. And we invite students from all over the state to join us for an oral argument, and we give the students briefs, and they can get other information or seek other information from lawyers or others about the case. And we have outside, and I think the students who have not had this information, we have brief summaries of the case we're about to hear. And for those that haven't boned up on this before, you should quickly read the fact situation set forth so that you can better listen to these arguments. So we're delighted to have you. And part of this program is that all the students, as well as everyone else here, you're all invited to stay beyond this oral argument and listen to a presentation by a justice. The presentation will be on the procedures the court uses, not the substance of the cases we have heard today. So let me introduce first the justice with whom you'll meet today, Justice John Wilcox, who is on my immediate right. And seated next to him is Justice Patrick Crooks. And then on the far right is Justice Diane Sykes. And on my far left is Justice Patience Rogensack. Seated next to her is Justice David Prosser. And to my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And I'm the Chief Justice, Shirley Abrahamson. So with that, those introductions made, we'll call our second case today, which is 02-2216-CR, State v. Donovan v. Malone. And arguing on behalf of the defendant, Mr. Malone, is John A. Cabranes. And then we're going to hear from Assistant Attorney General Gregory M. Weber. Counsel?
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, this is a fairly simple matter that has grown completely out of proportion to how it first started. The court doesn't need a recitation of the basic facts. The court already knows the basic facts. The question here is whether...
Then tell us the basic facts you're relying on.
Well, the basic facts I'm relying on is that this was a traffic stop that was done on a vehicle that was speeding down I-43 from Green Bay, Wisconsin, through Manitowoc County, in fact, just outside of Manitowoc. It was stopped by a state trooper. The state trooper came out of the vehicle, approached the vehicle, and by his own testimony, the first thing that he noticed was an unusual number, what he referred to as an unusual number of air conditioners, which he could not recall the exact amount, but which he supposed to be between 7 and 8 air fresheners. That immediately triggered in his mind, according to his testimony, the thought that there must be drug courier activity afoot. So he went back to his car with apparently the driver's license and registration of the vehicle's driver, came back to the vehicle, and then began pulling all of the occupants out of the vehicle one by one and questioning them as to where they were going and the purpose of their trip. When he received inconsistent answers, before he received inconsistent answers, he began to pat down each individual, all for the same reason, because he indicated that they appeared to be nervous. When he patted down my client, Mr. Malone, he found a substance which turned out to be apparently nothing, because it was tested twice. He believed it to be marijuana. It came up twice negative, but it was enough for him to call the dog. The dog hit on some issues, and then we find ourselves here.
The dog come after all three were pulled out and questioned?
The dog
patted down?
The dog did come in after all three and after all were patted down. The issue that we've brought before the court today is whether the officer, in this case Trooper Heyer, had articulated enough reasonable suspicion to shift the investigation from a traffic ticket to a narcotics investigation. Because that's clearly what he did. His own testimony is that as he was walking back to the vehicle, he was in fact investigating drug courier activity.
Did he have enough articulable suspicion to do the pat down?
I believe he...
That's the issue here.
No.
Not the issue.
I don't believe it's the pat down is the issue.
Okay.
There are two issues here. One of them is reasonable, articulable suspicion to shift this matter from a traffic investigation to a narcotics investigation. And the second issue really is pulling the occupants out of the vehicle and questioning each of the occupants in the vehicle with regards to where they were going. It's the position of Mr. Malone that the officer has clearly a right to question the driver as to where he's going and what he's going to do. That's part and parcel of the traffic stop. The law is very clear on that. The law is not so clear, and in fact, I argue that the law does not allow, at least not in the state of Wisconsin and not under the Fourth Amendment, to pull individuals out of a vehicle and then grill them with regards to what the driver was saying. In other words, comparing the testimony, the statements of the passengers in the vehicle with the statement of the driver.
If I could focus the argument a little bit more, you're not contending that removing the passengers from the car, ordering them out of the car in connection with a traffic stop is illegal under the Fourth Amendment?
No. No, Your Honor. What I'm contending is that I think up to the point where the officer pulled them out of the vehicle, the officer has a right, even this Court has decided that, and I think it was State v. Griffith, a case out of Racine where I practice, the officer has a right to know who he's dealing with. And so you can pull him out of the car and you can ask him name, identifying information. But there's nothing in Wisconsin which would indicate that, which would give the officer a right to go beyond that.
So the removal from the car, telling him to get out of the car, is not your focus?
The removal, getting out of the car, is not really the focus. The problem is what happened after he removed them from the car, because he didn't just remove them from the car. What he did was he then started comparing their stories to the story of the driver.
Oh, is that wrong? Excuse me. Go ahead, counsel. Is that wrong? Is it a violation to ask them where they're going? And is that what he asked the driver?
It's not wrong to ask the driver, Your Honor. But it is, I believe, inconsistent with the Fourth Amendment to start asking the passengers, because what we have here is
we're trying to narrow down the legal issue that we're applying to these facts. That's our problem. So can you ask the passengers their names?
Yes.
All right. Can you ask the passengers where they're going?
No.
What their destination? Okay, so you say it's contrary to the Fourth Amendment to ask passengers where they're going. Why can he ask the driver and not the passengers?
Because the driver is the one who's going there, and the driver is the one who's in charge of the vehicle.
Okay.
And the driver is the I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
That's
you.
That's all right.
And the driver is the one who committed the violation. And so it's the driver then.
Oh, but your passengers here violated the seatbelt law.
Well, Judge, Your Honor, I don't necessarily agree that the record is fleshed out to that extent. I know that the front right seat
passenger... There was no argument about that, was there? I mean, that was the observation of the officer?
That was the observation of the officer that he was, that my client in particular was, well, that the front, that none of the three were wearing seatbelts. It is, I think, undisputed that the front two individuals, the person in the driver's seat and the person in the right front seat, are required under the law to wear seatbelts. I don't know that the law requires the person in the back seat to wear the seatbelt, and I cited the statute, the specific seatbelt statute, in my brief, and it seems to indicate that what a person is required to do is, if a vehicle is equipped with a shoulder harness, the person sitting in the back seat must wear it. The record itself isn't fleshed out that this vehicle, that we don't have the make, model of the vehicle, and it's not, the record is not in itself fleshed out that it in fact was a shoulder harness in this vehicle and that the occupant of the back seat was required to wear that.
Doesn't the state make the observation in a footnote, I think in their brief, that this was a violation of the seatbelt law? I mean, I'm just recalling that.
They do, and they've alleged this all along. I think that that's a misreading of the seatbelt statute. The seatbelt statute, I cite and quote the seatbelt statute in the brief, and I think it's pretty clear that it applies to vehicles which have shoulder harnesses.
Suppose that your client wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Then there'd be a traffic violation, right? Can they ask him where he's going?
No.
And that's irrelevant then, whether he is or wasn't wearing in your mind.
I think so. And the reason why they can't. Because, Your Honor, the courts, both the United States Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals in Beto, limit the questioning of the individuals to the facts and circumstances surrounding the particular offense. And so in the case of a speeding ticket, what you have is you have a person going from point A to point B above the speed limit. And so that is part and parcel of the offense.
Let me ask you, if the driver didn't own the car, and there's a question, he's driving a car he doesn't own. Is that correct, Mr. Modi? I mean, the driver didn't own the car.
But the
passenger, Mr. Morrell did own the car.
Correct.
So he wanted to confirm. Is that something out of your, is that intrusive?
No, I don't believe so. But the other issue would have been he wouldn't have had to really get into a lot of that because he would have been able to ask Mr. Morrell for his identification and he would have been able to confirm that the Corey Morrell that was the individual that was sitting next to him is also the Corey Morrell who the vehicle was registered to.
And he asked him, he said, well, he ascertained that this is a driver. I mean, when you have someone driving a car they don't own and there's a maybe some questions as, well, whose car is it? Well, it's his car. And Mr. Morrell was sitting in the front seat without a seatbelt on. Is that a violation?
I believe that would be a violation.
Okay. So now he can talk. Do you disagree that he can talk to Mr. Morrell?
I don't disagree that he could talk to Mr. Under the facts that you've outlined where if the officer believes that there may be a situation where there is potentially a stolen vehicle or the driver of the vehicle is not the owner of the vehicle and that may lead to questions regarding whether or not the vehicle was stolen, then I think that that's an appropriate inquiry.
And the driver told the officer before, because the driver is the first one he talked to, is that he was going to a family member's home, I'm looking at the transcript here, house in Milwaukee. And then Mr. Morrell, the owner of the car, said they were going to a party in Milwaukee, and without asking any more, he said he was on probation for drug-related offenses. And then what other information? He said he was on probation, and they were going to go to a rave party. He wasn't going to go, but the other people were going to go to a rave party. So that was volunteered to him.
I don't agree it was volunteered.
Well, I asked him where he's going, and I'm looking at page 11, and he said, and they're going to a party in Milwaukee. And then without asking, he said he was on probation for drug-related offenses, page 12. And did he provide other information at that point? I asked him if it was, you know, he's on probation. If it was acceptable with his probation officer that he was going to parties in Milwaukee if he was on probation. And he said the other two occupants were going to parties, but he wasn't going to go there. And then did he talk about any kind of party? He said it was a rave party.
No,
you're saying that that is intrusive?
I am saying that's intrusive. I'm saying that what he was essentially, when I say he, I mean Trooper Heyer was doing, was testing each individual's story against the other, looking for inconsistencies in that story. I think he was essentially interrogating these individuals, looking for an excuse to then call in the dog or ask for a search or pat these individuals down. I think the record is clear that that we're dealing with a pretext here. Now, when we're dealing with pretext searches, we fall into the realm of Wren. But Wren is not unlimited. Wren still has some boundaries, and the boundaries are that before the officer can continue that investigation can continue on a separate track, he must have reasonable and articulable suspicion that there is some other type of offense afoot. And the only reasonable articulable suspicion that this officer has ever given for sidetracking this traffic investigation into a narcotics investigation is these air fresheners.
And then there were 7 or 8 air fresheners. They were hanging where?
I believe they were hanging from the rearview mirror.
Well, you've got a rearview mirror with 7 or 8 air fresheners on it.
That's correct, Your Honor. But
and the officer said that, why did he say that, what was the concern he had?
Well, the concern that Trooper Heyer had was that, quote-unquote, based on his training and experience, an excessive amount of air fresheners was an indication of a drug courier activity because the air fresheners acted as a masking odor for the narcotics involved. But the problem with the officer's observation is, when asked, did you notice a strong masking odor? The answer was no. Did you notice the odor of narcotics? The answer was no. When we went through the litany of questions asking the type of questions that would generate some reasonable suspicion, the answers were all no. He didn't notice any furtive movements. There was just nothing other than the air fresheners.
You brought up furtive movements. He did notice there were 3 people here, and he did notice that they seemed to be nervous, which is something that I would say is not unusual. What about their hands?
Well, Your Honor, you've mentioned that.
I'm just going through the litany, and I just wanted to ask you what you find that to be unusual?
I would, but the problem is that the hands don't start until after the questioning starts. If you look at the sequence of events, what you have is you have the questioning beginning and then the nervousness appearing. And I think that those two points are not unrelated.
Well, that's why I keep saying to you, just what is it that you're objecting to here? We never get to the hands, because you're not fighting whether there's articulable suspicion to pat them down, which is when they found the drugs.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So he is the third person, right?
He is the third person out of the video.
All right. Approximately how this – okay. The third individual, I'm reading at page 13. This is the person we're talking about, right? The others are out of this case.
Correct.
The third individual came out of the vehicle, and who was that? Donovan Malone. And did you have a conversation with him outside the vehicle? Yes, I did. Where did that take place? The same spot as the other two, between my squad and their vehicle. And what was your conversation with him? I asked him where they were going that day, and he said they were going to see some family members in one of the passengers' family in Milwaukee, but he was just along for the ride. He didn't know the family they were going to see. At what point in time did you direct information from the scene where each of the individuals is from? Yes, and then it goes to somebody else. Is that what you're objecting to, those questions and that answer? And if not, precisely what are you objecting to and why?
Those are exactly the questions that we object to, Your Honor.
That's it. What should the officer have done?
It's our position that any questions related to that he had posed to Donovan Malone should have been directed specifically at the violation that Donovan Malone committed, if in fact Donovan Malone committed any offense. In this case, there's an allegation of a seatbelt violation. So under the law, as I understand it, the questioning has to be directed at the facts and circumstances surrounding the offense, limiting it then to the seatbelt violation, identification issues, and just personal identification issues.
Did he keep them too long? Is that it? Is that your seizure here? Is that he kept them too long and asked these questions and then moved into other areas? Is that what the problem is?
Judge, I think that's part of the problem, but that's not the only problem. The problem is that in the previous case that we dealt with today, there was an issue of a frisk. And
that's not the issue here.
No, I understand that. But it's a similar issue in that the questioning of an individual for an offense that the individual is not under investigation for, quite frankly, is, I think, just as egregious as a frisk without reasonable suspicion.
Here's my problem with you, what you say. I'm speeding, okay? I'm on the I-90 system. I'm between Milwaukee and Waukesha, or I could be between Milwaukee and ultimately Minneapolis, right? You don't know where I'm going. What difference does it make? I can see why it asked my name. I could see why it asked my registration. So it's not a stolen car. That might be good police work, but stolen or not stolen has nothing to do with why I'm speeding. And I agree I'm speeding. So if we carry your argument further, you shouldn't be even able to ask the driver where he's going. See, it's irrelevant. I'm on the right road. I'm in the right lane. I'm going too fast.
I don't disagree with you.
But the U.S. Supreme Court case, you said you could ask the destination.
You can ask the driver the destination. That's correct.
What has that got to do with speeding?
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with speeding, and I personally view that as somewhat illogical. But we have to deal with the law as we find it, and the law as we find it is that he's allowed to ask the driver. But he's not allowed to go beyond that with the driver, and he's not allowed to go beyond that with the passengers either. And when I say beyond that, beyond the reason for stopping. To a certain extent, if you look at the framework, and in this case, I think we're talking about Wren and Mims. If you look at the framework of these decisions, the questions asked of the driver are still on point in terms of the offense. You have a speeding offense. A speeding offense is somebody's trying to get from point A to point B quicker than the law allows. So the questions then directed at the individual as to where you're going, why you're going, it's not unlike an officer coming up to an individual and saying, where's the fire? Asking for an explanation as to why you're speeding. The same is not necessarily true of, in this case, a seatbelt violation. Because what you have is you have an officer coming up to the vehicle, and the questions are not regarding a seatbelt violation. The questions are now designed by the officer to test the answers that were given to him by the driver of the vehicle and, in fact, by the two passengers. And that's going to give him the reasonable suspicion then to do the pat downs and to call the dog.
Counsel, maybe the difficulty is this, and let me toss this out. The certified question presented by the Court of Appeals seems to focus on whether or not there is authority for asking the passengers to exit the vehicle. It reads, during a routine traffic stop, may the police request the passengers, as well as the driver, to exit the vehicle and individually ask them questions reasonably related to the nature of the stop. So the question as certified assumes that the
questions that will be asked are reasonably related to the nature of the stop. And you would say, yeah, that's the law. They should be reasonably related to the nature of the stop. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay, so your focus, as you're arguing here today, seems to be different than the certified question. And do you think my observation is correct or incorrect?
I don't believe it's correct, Your Honor. And the reason I don't believe it's correct is that the problem is that the facts that we're dealing with are slightly different than the question that was presented for certification.
I apologize. Let me just interrupt your response then. I mean, I note on page 4, the very first sentence in the discussion of the certification states, the facts of this case require consideration of whether Beto's approval of reasonable questioning of a driver should be extended to permit reasonable questioning of passengers. That's the thesis sentence of the whole discussion, and it assumes the questioning is reasonable. But your attack here today is focused on the attack of whether indeed the questioning by law enforcement is reasonable. It seems to me you're arguing a different issue than presented in the certification. Now, if you may.
I don't necessarily see it that way, because I believe that the questioning beyond that which is currently permitted by law, any questioning beyond that is per se unreasonable. And so I think I do address it, and I think my argument today has been fairly consistent throughout the whole process, which is essentially, if you have a legitimate reason for pulling him out of the vehicle, and let's assume for the sake of argument the seatbelt violation, if you assume that the seatbelt violation is a legitimate reason for pulling him out of the vehicle, then your questioning then must be limited to that seatbelt violation. I think what the Court of Appeals was certifying, at least what I understood the Court of Appeals to be certifying, is whether or not what you could pull people out of the vehicle and then compare their answers to the answers given by the driver.
And indeed, in support of what you're advancing, at the end of the certification, the Court of Appeals lists a number of what I would call mini questions, in other words, a series of questions, and that's one of them. Is that so? I don't mean to suggest you're a field, but it just seems a bit different.
Well, and it may be. I mean, my understanding of what the question that the Court of Appeals wanted to dealt with is essentially, how far could the police officer go in questioning the passengers of a vehicle when the passengers of the vehicle are just that, passengers of a vehicle, and not the people who have actually perpetrated some type of offense. And I think that the position that I've articulated is not inconsistent, because if the passengers of the vehicle are not guilty of an offense, then I think what the law is, and I think that this Court said it in Griffith, was you can ask them identifying information. You can ask name. You can ask address. You can find out who you're dealing with. But if there is an offense associated with that, such as jaywalking, such as a traffic violation, then you can ask some questions related specifically to that particular offense.
Counsel, can I just ask here? When you have more than one person in the vehicle, I don't want you to concede anything, but I think it's fairly clear that the officer could ask the driver to exit the vehicle, and we can debate whether he could ask the others who allegedly violated the seatbelt to exit. But when the questions and the answers come back and they're inconsistent, are you saying that the officer cannot follow up on those?
No, I think
if one says I'm going, and you say, well, it doesn't make any difference whether you're going to Milwaukee, Green Bay, or up to Nome, Alaska. If one's going to Nome, Alaska, and the other says we're going to Tijuana, Mexico, you've got, and then you're saying you should drop it there. Wouldn't an officer, in his ordinary course of being a good officer, want to ask some follow-up questions?
Well, Your Honor, I think that gets us into...
And isn't that what happened here?
That's a two-part question. The first part is, I agree with you that the officer can expand the scope of his investigation if he lawfully inquires of these individuals what the purpose of their destination is. If Trooper Heyer had limited his questions to the questions that I believe are permitted by law.
And what are those? Just
well, for the passengers in under this fact circumstance, and assuming that my client did in fact commit a seatbelt violation, then the questions would be questions of an identifying nature. Who are you? Where do you live? Those type of things, identification type questions, and questions specifically related to the offense for which he is about to be cited or an offense that he has committed.
Is where you are going a proper question?
I don't believe so, because he is not in control of the vehicle. He is not the one who committed the traffic offense.
One was the owner of the vehicle. So you're saying when the owner of the vehicle sits in the car and there's somebody else driving, that the owner has no reason to have any opinion on where they may be going?
No, I'm not saying he doesn't have any reason to have an opinion. I'm just saying that the officer doesn't have the right to question him about it.
Well, the purpose of the stop originally was for speeding, wasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the law permits the officer to remove the occupants of the vehicle, drivers and passengers. There's a per se rule under Mims and Maryland versus Wilson that permits that.
That's
right?
Correct. Yes, that is.
So again, you're not focusing on the exiting of the vehicle. And the law also is that the officer may question all of the occupants of the vehicle regarding the purposes of the stop.
No, I don't believe that to be the case, Your Honor. I think the law is very clear that you can stop and question the driver of the vehicle related to the purpose of the stop. The state has provided some case law from the Eighth Circuit, which seemed to indicate that the Eighth Circuit believes that the Constitution permits a situation where you can question everybody and compare and contrast their answers, and then that may give you a reasonable suspicion.
But look, what's the difference between what you're saying and what Justice Sykes is saying? Mr. Sykes just said, isn't the law that you question all of them regarding the purpose of the stop? The reason for the stop is speeding. You said that you can only ask the passengers anything relating to their violation, and that would be seatbelt. So it seems to me your response to her should be, yeah, for the purpose of the stop. Now, the purpose of the stop was for the driver for speeding. I suppose you could say to the passenger, did you encourage him to speed? Maybe that's aiding and abetting. I don't know. Did you ask to get out so that maybe you're liable or not liable for an accident that would occur? But why shouldn't you answer her yes?
I understood the question from Justice Sykes to indicate that the stop that she was talking about was the speeding stop, and not
that's the stop that we're talking about. This
right.
is not a seatbelt stop.
Right.
This is a speeding stop.
Correct.
So that reasonable suspicion justifies questions to anybody in the vehicle regarding that stop.
Regarding speeding. Okay.
Where are you going in such a hurry?
I don't see that.
There isn't any case that prohibits that.
There isn't any case that allows it. Not the passengers.
How about United States versus Childs?
Your Honor, United States versus Childs, I believe, is one of those Eighth Circuit cases.
It's the Seventh Circuit en banc.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And if you're not familiar with the case,
I don't
fine.
Know
Nobody
the case. I don't
it,
know the case, and I don't want to sit here and talk about something I don't know. But I have reviewed the Eighth Circuit cases, and I know that those would allow what you're talking about. And there's other issues, but I see that my time has run out. I'll give the state an opportunity, and then
and you'll be back, counsel.
I'm sorry?
Then you'll be back.
I'm without a doubt.
Assistant Attorney General Gregory M. Weber, representing the state of Wisconsin. Mr. Weber?
Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the court. The state, first of all, asks this court for three specific holdings. First, with respect to the issue that was certified by the Court of Appeals, we ask this court to hold that during a traffic stop, police may ask the occupants of the car, driver and passengers, to exit the car and to individually answer questions reasonably related to the nature of the stop. Again, during routine traffic stops, police may ask the occupants of the car, both driver and passengers, to exit the car and to individually answer questions reasonably related to the nature of the stop.
That's sort of easy, but what's reasonably related to the nature of the stop?
Well,
that's the heart of it.
Well, and that goes into the second and third holdings we'd like.
Go ahead. State the questions before you answer mine.
The second holding we'd like from the court is during the traffic stop in this case, Trooper Heyer developed reasonable suspicion to pursue a drug investigation. And third, that the facts known to Trooper Heyer satisfied the objective test for reasonable suspicion. These track the point headings in the state's brief.
Okay, so you're moving into reasonable suspicion for drug, which gave him the right to pat down, gave him the right to do the search, bring in the dogs and everything. All right.
As I understand it, Mr. Malone is not challenging the pat-downs insofar as they were consensual. He's not challenging the search that eventually yielded the drugs, the dog sniff. He's challenging, as I understand it, the scope of the questioning that was directed to the driver and the passengers, and is in essence arguing that there were two investigations here, one for traffic, one for drugs, and that the drugs investigation lacked reasonable suspicion.
So why do we have to hold number two and three?
I'm sorry?
Why do we have to make holdings two and three?
They flow from the first holding in the facts
of
this case.
What is reasonably related to the nature of the stop?
First of all, if I can answer it going to the initial point of contention, the questions that were directed to the passengers in this case pertaining to destination and such, there can't be any serious question that a law enforcement officer investigating a traffic stop involving a driver and multiple passengers, there can't be any reasonable suggestion that the officer can't ask the passengers as well as the driver questions related to the stop, destination, where you're going, who you're with, what you're going to do when you get there, the types of questions that were asked in this case. And what Mr. Malone is not recognizing in this case is that the law enforcement officer who makes this stop is conducting an investigation of a traffic offense that, according to the United States Supreme Court in Atwater, could result in an arrest. The law enforcement officers in this type of circumstance have the authority to arrest. It's manifestly reasonable for the officer to question witnesses to this offense, the passengers in the car.
But it seems to me what's reasonably related to speeding is your odometer working? How fast do you think you were going? Do you have any reason to go that fast? Is anyone going to the hospital so that you come under the Brown case?
Well, I think you just answered my question there, because are you going to the hospital is a question pertaining to destination.
Oh, but that only pertains to an excuse that the court will recognize.
Or a reason that the officer might take into consideration in deciding whether or not to cite the guy. If they're going 5 miles down the road, the officer might say, well, you know, I'm going to give you a warning. I'm going to give you a pass this time since you're so close to home. On the other hand, if he's being stopped in Manitowoc County and he's going to Milwaukee and he's driving 75 miles an hour, the officer may inquire reasonably of all of the people in this car as to destination and make a different decision on whether or not to cite.
So it's to exercise prosecutorial discretion.
Law enforcement discretion in the field, but sure.
And certainly, as I asked opposing counsel, if the driver is not the owner of the car, it seems reasonable and would only be logical that you would ask, well, who, if not you, who owns the car?
Under the circumstances of this case, of course, where you had a driver and an owner of the car who were two different people.
And then the owner wasn't driving, and then he later checked his record and found that he didn't have a valid license.
Right.
But the officer knew Malone didn't own this car.
The officer was completing his investigation. He knew that one other person had indicated that they owned the car, and he had the records check.
Counselor, does it matter that this is really a pretextual investigation?
Not at all, Justice Rogensack. That's a MacGuffin. In Hitchcock movies, there's a MacGuffin, something that supposedly has great significance but really doesn't. The trooper's subjective opinions or desires or motivations here is a MacGuffin. Wren versus United States, this court in Baudhein, and other courts since then have said the subjective motivation doesn't matter with respect to reasonable suspicion if there's objective justification in the facts of record, and we're arguing that there is.
What about the, you know, it doesn't seem that it's contested, and I suppose it can't be strongly so, that the officer could have asked these fellas to get out of the car, but doesn't it make his questioning more coercive? That he's not, I know in U.S. v. Childs, which was cited to your colleague, the officer, there were two officers, one was talking to the driver and the other to the passenger, but they were in the car, they weren't asked to get out of the car. Do you think that has no relevance to our inquiry here about the questions that were asked and whether it was reasonable to ask them under these circumstances?
If you follow United States versus Childs, it's relevant but in a very diminished capacity. Childs, Judge Easterbrook, writing for an en banc panel of the Seventh Circuit, said that questions themselves are not seizures. They're not inherently coercive. Okay. Child stands for the proposition that as long as you had probable cause to make the stop, and they did here, it's conceded, as long as you have probable cause to make the stop, as long as your questions either occur within the scope of the principal investigation, and there's language in the decision that says you can even go beyond that some, that law enforcement officers are free to ask questions pertaining to other possible criminal violations so long as the person who's being questioned has the right not to answer.
You know, that's always troublesome here because, first of all, did he ask the guys if they wanted to get out of the car? I think it looks like he says, you get out of the car, and he asked them one by one to get out and question them. And, you know, that makes some concern for the coercive nature of the questions and whether they become unreasonable by that. And then in Childs, Easterbrook talks a lot about, well, this guy was really in custody because he could have arrested him and taken him downtown for the seatbelt violation. Well, if he's in custody, is he in the type of custody where Miranda warnings are required? I mean, it gets very confused if you kind of follow what he's saying, or at least for me it's confusing.
And Justice Rogensack, you'll note that the state didn't cite Childs in its brief.
Why not?
I didn't think this court would buy the reasoning that Judge Easterbrook puts forward in the decision. And secondly, I'm not at all convinced that Childs is fully consistent with this court's jurisprudence, this court's Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. I think this court is more likely to look closely at the nature of the questioning in relation to the purpose of the stop. Easterbrook says that that can be a consideration, but it's not a principal consideration. The state case that seems to be most on point with Childs is a decision of the Court of Appeals in Gulrap, State versus Gulrap, 207, I think, was second. So I had some reservations about Childs. I thought Judge Easterbrook's analysis was interesting. I agree with him in that questions in and of themselves are not seizures, are not necessarily coercive, and I think he takes a very pragmatic view of the entire process. If you had a police officer who stopped this car for speeding and then questioned the occupants and the driver for 2 hours on federal income tax violations, you might have a coercive situation. And I doubt that the Seventh Circuit would uphold such a stop. Here we have no question that it's a short stop. The questions themselves don't appear to have been inherently coercive. They seem very reasonable under the circumstances.
But don't you think these guys were nervous because they were outside the car And don't people often blurt out things and think they can't answer an officer when they're in a position? I mean, was there any point at which they could have said to the officer, I don't want to talk to you anymore?
I think these guys were nervous because they're about to do a drug deal.
Well,
and yes, and yes, absolutely, they could have declined to answer questions.
Yeah.
Well, that would have really been suspicious, especially with the air fresheners, right?
It is black letter law enforcement doctrine that masking agents are used by drug traffickers to defeat the smell of narcotics. And counsel noted that the officer didn't testify that there was a smell of narcotics. Well, the air fresheners are there for two reasons, to throw off the officers and to throw off the dogs.
And that has nothing to do with us, does it?
Well, it has to do with the reasonable suspicion equation, yes.
Pardon me?
It does have to do with the reasonable suspicion equation.
For searching, but not for questioning. That's a question.
It certainly has a role to play in searching. Our position in this case has been that under the totality of the circumstances, this factual constellation that the officer was confronting gave him a reasonable basis to move from a pure traffic investigation to a drugs investigation.
Okay. When did he make that move? When he asked the destination? Because, you see, I think you've just shifted ground. Your position, I thought, was that he, the officer, has a right to question about the purpose of the stop. The purpose of the stop was speeding. He has a right to ask questions relating to speeding. He can ask destination because he's going to exercise law enforcement officer discretion as to whether to give the ticket or not. And if he's on a long haul, he doesn't want a speeder on the road. If he's on a short haul, give him a warning. I mean, that's your theory. Therefore, the question relates to a reason for the stop. Now, if after there's a stop, and now he's on suspicion of drugs because he has the air fresheners, which he sees almost instantly, then we got a different case. I want to know what case are we. I probed the defendant, too. I want to know what case we are. What is the question to be answered? Now, you said the question was, the first one related to the stop. During a traffic stop, can he ask everyone to exit and ask questions reasonably related to the nature? You then went on after that on the drug stop.
Right.
But can't we answer question number one without ever getting any further? Because that the whole drug search is not before us. That's what your whole brief, I shouldn't say the whole brief, the whole last page of the brief. That's what my point of my question. If I'm wrong, you and I have discussed cases before, you'll tell me.
Before you answer, because I asked this before, you have the interrelationship between the questions that have been asked of the various people. So, in other words, I think, and I want you to answer as I asked opposing counsel, that when he questioned the driver, he found out certain information. When he questioned the front seat passenger, he found out something contrary to what the driver had said. Now, is that important?
Answer my question
first. I didn't get a chance to ask my question, so I want my question.
As is so often the case, I'm not entirely sure where the chief is going with her questioning.
That's the truth.
So I'm going to be careful.
I'll let you know where I'm going.
Go ahead, answer his question, but then answer mine. I really don't care in what order you do it. It's all right with me.
I think the answer to the first question, the certified question, gives us a groundwork or a framework to determine whether the officer's conduct in this case, relative to this driver, this defendant, was objectively reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. So I don't think you can stop with just the first question. I think you have to go on and say, okay, the officer acted reasonably in pulling these people out of the car and questioning them in a manner that's connected to the basis of the stop. Now, as the information is coming into the officer, the facts, the circumstances, the reasonable inferences from that, we develop an objective basis to say, okay, we now have a basis to conduct a drugs investigation here. Now, I'm not trying to be thick. I just...
I'll give you an actual fact situation, up to a point. I'm driving home on Monday night in a driving rain. I'm on the I-90 system, and I have a passenger in my car. And now I will change the facts. I'm either speeding or I'm going below the legal limit of 45.
Yes. We know that.
And so I am stopped. And I am asked my name, I am asked my address, I'm asked to give my driver's license, and I'm asked if I'm the owner of the car. And I accurately respond to all of them and say I'm not the owner. The owner is a male. And the officer then, and he puts that into his computer and asks me to get out in the driving rain and asks the occupant to get out, passenger to get out in the driving rain, who is a male who doesn't have the same name as I have said the owner. And he asked me, where am I going? And I said, I'm going home to Madison. He asked the occupant where he's going, and he says, I'm going to Madison. I'm going to the Badger bus station. Okay. Is that suspicious? No air fresheners. No obstruction to the windows. No smell of smoke, whether it would be marijuana or cigarettes. Just smells of two people sitting in a car for too long a time.
You haven't described to me any inconsistencies between the two versions.
I'm going home. He says he's going to the bus station. That's inconsistent. Do you live in the bus station? Mrs. Abraham said, no, I do not.
Okay. If that is the
going to a party, maybe.
If that is the single inconsistency.
Going to a rave party?
Not a rave party. If that is the single inconsistency, if that is the single inconsistency between the two versions of events, I, as a law enforcement officer, probably would not be particularly suspicious.
Okay, but wait a minute. Can you ask the passenger the question? That's the point of this case, as I understand it. Can you ask him his destination?
Sure, you can.
Your answer is sure you can. His answer is sure you can't. Is if I understand this case. Maybe I don't understand.
Well, Mr. Malone hasn't addressed the core contention that the state is making here, that this traffic stop is in essence a stop to perform a criminal law enforcement investigation. Atwater versus City of Lago Vista says that you can be arrested for this type of stuff.
Unrelated to the speeding.
Again, please.
Investigation unrelated to the speeding.
No, not in your fact situation, and not in the fact situation here.
The point is questions about destination, whether they're addressed to the driver or the passenger, and whether they're addressed to the driver or the passenger inside the car or outside the car, are perfectly reasonable in connection with the speeding stop.
Yes.
And there is no case that says otherwise.
There's no case that says otherwise. There are a number of cases that say, yes, those questions are acceptable. And there's a case from the Seventh Circuit that says we aren't even going to worry considerably if it isn't an appropriate question, given the facts and circumstances of the case.
Right. And the only the confusion here is arising because these are fluid situations, and reasonable suspicion is sort of coming in as the officer is conducting this stop, reasonable suspicion to perhaps extend the stop beyond its original purpose, which was speeding. But we're trying to parse it and compartmentalize it here from the bench, which is what confuses the situation. The only reason you would need additional reasonable suspicion, that is the drug stuff, is if the questions that were asked about destination to each of these occupants, driver and passengers, unreasonably exceeded the scope of the original stop. So we don't have to get to that if those questions did not exceed that scope.
I agree. Justice Sykes, Chief Justice, Chief Justice, Justice Sykes.
Well, that's right, because once you, your answer is okay to ask the question, end of case, because they're not worrying about the drug search.
But as I understand your position, even if that's not okay, there was enough on the basis of the air fresheners to exceed the scope of the original stop. So
plainly, that's the argument that we've made, that there was a linear progression of information that came to the law enforcement officer's attention. That information, reasonably analyzed through the law enforcement officer's perspective, generated reasonable suspicion to conduct a drugs investigation.
We don't have to answer the certified question in this case because of this other information. Right?
You could avoid the first question and simply evaluate the case in the way that it was presented to the Court of Appeals, certainly. I think it is far more appropriate to view it as a progression from the question that the Court of Appeals certified to the final conclusion that we're urging the state to or that we're urging the court to adopt. Truly, I'm not trying to be difficult here.
I'm trying to understand that, because suppose you didn't have the freshener and all of that in my case. You'd have to let us out of there very quickly, wouldn't you?
I would think so if I'm recalling your facts, yes.
And even if the guy said, I'm going to Delavan or I'm going to Minneapolis, and I said, I'm going to Madison, is that going to be enough to do anything else?
Under the facts that you describe, probably not.
But he can ask where we're both going.
He can ask where you're going. He can ask essentially the same questions that he asked the driver in order for comparison purposes.
The guy said he was going to a rave party. Couldn't do very much after that anyway.
Well, the rave party raises other considerations.
Like?
Like the connection between rave parties and narcotics trafficking.
So everybody who goes to a rave party is reasonable suspicion that they're in narcotics?
No, not at all. But the case law establishes that benign explanations for circumstances don't necessarily defeat, in the totality of the circumstances, a conclusion that gives you a reasonable suspicion to believe that a crime is being committed.
Good. And just to clarify some of the dialogue that has gone on in this argument, there is no issue about the validity of the search here.
No.
This was a consent search.
No, there is no.
All consensual.
At the front end of the equation, Mr. Malone doesn't challenge probable cause to make the traffic stop. At the back end of the equation, Mr. Malone doesn't challenge the pat-down that produced the drugs that he was holding, doesn't challenge the dog sniff search that revealed the rest of the contraband.
Just challenges the questions.
He challenges the questions. He challenges the middle part.
That's right. And you say the questioning was fine.
Absolutely reasonable. Absolutely reasonable under the Fourth Amendment.
And that's where you draw the line. Quite clear. Thank you.
I always prefer to answer questions.
You always say that, but I'm not so sure, Mr. Weber.
Constantly chief. I thank the court.
Thank you, Assistant Attorney General Weber. Counsel.
Well, I'd just like to clarify one thing. Donovan Malone was not found with any drugs on his person. Donovan Malone was found with a substance a trooper hired believed to have been drugs, and it was tested not once but twice, and it didn't test positive for drugs. So
where are we in this case?
Well, Judge, Your Honor,
where is Mr. Malone at the moment?
Mr. Malone, I believe, is serving a sentence for possession of cocaine from Shawnee County.
As a result of this?
No, as a result of a separate matter.
Okay, but what happened to this matter?
Mr. Malone received probation.
He was convicted?
He was. I don't disagree with the Attorney General's General's office, the Assistant Attorney General's position in this matter, that the if you answer the first question, the first question is not what we have been arguing since for almost 2 years now. We've been arguing, and I think that it's kind of lost in the shuffle in to a certain extent, that this investigation, this quote-unquote investigation, is a pretextual investigation, which was triggered when the officer saw the air fresheners. Now, United States versus Rand says it doesn't matter what the pretext is as long as there's a basis for it. Within Wren and within its progeny, there has been concern about how far officers are going to take this freedom that Wren gives them. And I think this is a classic example of the type of concerns that I know for one Justice Scalia has expressed, that, you know, officers are going to push the envelope as far as they can until the courts snap back. And this is what I think, and I firmly believe this court should do, because this investigation is only on its face a traffic investigation. The testimony of Trooper Heyer is unambiguous and very clear that when he went back to the car after running the driver's ID and before asking the first question to any one of the three individuals, he was initiating a drug investigation.
His subjective intent does not matter. So what is objectively unreasonable about asking the occupants of a vehicle stopped for speeding, where are they going in such a hurry?
Well, there's nothing objectively unreasonable about asking the driver of the vehicle, because he's the driver of the vehicle. What's objectively unreasonable about asking the passengers is that you're interrogating the passengers. And the passengers have absolutely no obligation to answer those questions. The problem is that when they do answer, if they choose to exercise their right in not answering the question, that's going to give the trooper reasonable suspicion to continue his investigation.
So you concede that it's not unreasonable to ask the passengers, or are you contending that it is unreasonable?
It is unreasonable to ask the passengers anything.
Is there any case that supports that?
There is no case that supports that. There is no case that supports the position that it is unreasonable. There is, under United States Supreme Court cases, there is nothing which allows police officers to do this. Now, this court has always followed the United States Supreme Court's positions in terms of search and seizure law, but you don't even have to do that. This court, and I don't need to lecture this court on the powers of this court, the United States Supreme Court sets the minimum standards for the protection of the population. This court can increase and give more protection to its citizens than the federal Supreme Court allows. And that's what I'm suggesting here, is that just because the United States Supreme Court is silent, it does not make the actions of the police officer, the intrusion into these individuals' lives, does not make those actions reasonable in light of the fact.
But the case law is that asking questions in and of itself isn't a seizure.
But the questions have to be reasonably related to the offense for which they are stopped. And I guess the question is, how do you phrase the offense that you're talking about? If you agree with the state that the offense that you're talking about is the speeding offense, then the same questions that are asked of the driver are going to be able to be asked to the passengers, if the phrasing is that. If the phrasing is that the offense is the driver's offense, and that the passenger's offense may have been seatbelt violations, then it's our position that any questioning has to be limited to the seatbelt violations and not the traffic matters. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brannis, and thank you, Mr. Weber, for your interesting arguments on the case, which involved perhaps not even agreeing on what the issue in the case is. Some of us not agreeing. Thank you. That ends our hearing on 02-2216-CR, State v. Donovan v. Malone. The court is in recess until next week, when we will hear two more cases. these students will remain here and be joined by other students. And Justice Wilcox will be out within a few moments to talk with you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the heads up. I don't know how I missed that one. Well, you've got Sykes and you've got Wilkins. I don't know about anybody else.
Please have a seat.